Hey folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 163 of the True Crime All the Time podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, how are you?
I'm good, man. Doing well.
I'm glad to hear it. Yeah. I hope you had a good Christmas. Here's the problem.
Yeah.
You can't actually tell me if you had a good Christmas because we're recording this before Christmas.
Well, I think I'll have a good one because I was nice. I wasn't naughty.
Well, let's just assume that we both did.
Yeah.
And say, yeah, it was great.
There you go. Merry Christmas to us.
So like I said, we're recording this right before Christmas. And
yeah,
it's such a busy time of the year, man. I had to go out yesterday to the mall area. I wasn't even going to the mall.
Oh, really?
Just around it.
Oh, that's terrible.
And it, you know, it's gridlock.
Yeah. Well, you know where I work. Yeah. So, you know, just...
Where I used to work?
Where you used to work, yeah.
Yeah, I am very familiar with it.
Yeah. So just going out to lunch around that area, man, is a nightmare now because the mall's right there.
Sure. Yeah. But it doesn't last long. And then before you know it, we'll be back to normal.
Yeah.
All right, Gibbs. So we have our new Patreon supporters.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and give our shout outs. Right. We had Annie Snyder.
Hey, Annie.
Patricia Lopez.
What's going on, Patricia?
Najara Payne.
Ooh, Najara.
Mm-hmm. Kyle Roost.
What's going on, Kyle?
Tamara Knight.
Hey, thanks, Tamara.
James Simon.
What's going on, James?
Amanda Hamlin.
Hey, Amanda.
Catherine Wilms.
What's going on, Catherine?
Megan Seitz.
Ooh, Megan. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Danielle Hawk.
Hawk.
Well,
you got some phlegm in your mouth?
Yeah, I had a little something going on there. Carly Fitzgerald.
Hey, Carly.
Lulu and Oscar.
Hey, what's up, Lulu and Oscar?
Heather Deluxe. Lena Cuneo.
Hey, Cuneo.
Tamarind Lee Apolis.
Ooh, Apolis.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen that before.
Yeah, that's a good one to put in at a restaurant.
Monica Phillips.
Hey, Monica.
Williams Campbell.
What's going on, Williams Campbell?
Henson Milam.
Hey, thanks, Henson.
Sylvie.
Just Sylvie.
Sherry.
Hey, Sherry.
Danielle Cunaberte.
Ooh, Cunaberte.
That's fun to say.
It is. I'm going to say that again later today.
Just for the fun of it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe at a holiday party or, you know.
Just random.
Just figure out a way to bring it up in conversation.
Exactly.
And then last but not least, Reese Cowie.
Hey, Reese.
So we appreciate all that new support. And then if we go back into the vault, Gibbs. This week we selected Andrea Hendrickson.
Wow, that's awesome.
Andrea. Yeah. So a lot of new support, a lot of people, Gibbs, that have been with us for years and years. And we just appreciate it all.
We do. We really do.
We had some PayPal support as well. Kathleen Martin.
Hey, Kathleen.
Angie Stevenson.
Hey, Angie.
Julie Brown.
What's up, Julie?
And Eva's Nater Terapi.
Nater Terapi?
Yeah, that's the second time I've had to say that.
Yeah.
And I'm still not sure if I'm even close, to be honest with you.
I don't know either. I don't know what a Nater Terapi is.
I don't either. So listen, we're taking this week off. not really, because you and I are sitting here in the studio recording, but
right.
essentially, as close as you and I can get to taking the week off, that's what we're doing. But we have something very special for our TCAT fans. This is an episode that you and I recorded earlier in the year for Patreon. This was maybe 5-6 months ago. I don't remember exactly when it came out. We did it for a very specific reason, and that was to correct the second episode that we ever did of True Crime All the Time.
Right.
I did it by myself on Richard Kuklinski. You know, if you think back, Gibbs, that was what, 2016? You and I had done the first episode, and I think, you know, we were kind of still up in the air about, you know, number one, what is this podcast? Number right. two, is it something that you were wanting to do, right? You were helping me out essentially with yeah, the first one.
Absolutely.
And so after doing the second one by myself, I think I remember coming into the office and saying, hey, I got to have you, brother, because this is hard to do an episode by yourself, to have no one to talk to.
Yeah.
It just didn't feel the same. And obviously the people that have listened to that episode over the years, a lot of them got that same feeling, right? It's not that right. it's a horrible episode.
No, it's not.
But it's not a TCAT episode.
Yeah, it's not the same.
It's not the same.
Yeah. And what I liked about that is that's when I went, so the first episode you had me sitting on that Rubbermaid stool.
Oh, so now there's a Rubbermaid stool yeah, that comes into play. Yeah.
And then that's when the wooden slotted chair came into play. You're like, come back, episode 3. And I'm like, I can't sit on a Rubbermaid stool. You got to give me something a little bit better than that.
I found this old,
yes.
as you would put it, wooden slotted.
Yes.
Which is still grammatically something I can't wrap my head around.
It's a very
Gibby-like
yes.
phrase. So, you know, that was the only episode, right, of TCAT without Gibby, and we just couldn't let that stand. So this is what we did. We went back, we researched the case again, completely throughout the original research, did it from scratch.
Yeah.
So in addition to you being on the episode, it's also much different. It's much better. You know, our techniques of research and the things that we employ, the tools and all that, have developed over time,
right?
Have gotten better. So everyone sit back and enjoy what we're calling Richard Kuklinski Redux.
I like that.
I hope everyone does.
Yeah.
All right, man. Let's get into this episode. I'm really excited. I've always been fascinated by Kuklinski, and I think, you know, sitting down and doing the episode with you, it's perfect, right? We're talking about a guy that was a family man, wife and kids, but at the same time was killing people. I mean, left and right. You know how we always talk about serial killers exaggerating?
Sure.
I'm not sure how much exaggerating Kuklinski did. I'm sure he did some. I have a feeling he killed a shitload of people.
Oh, I think so. We know so.
Which is more than a boatload.
More than a boatload.
In case anybody's wondering.
Big boat.
And, you know, his reasons for killing, I think some of his victims may have been different than, let's say, some of the serial killers we've talked about.
Yeah.
Then again, maybe not.
Could be intertwined.
Yeah. I mean, he killed people that annoyed him. He killed people that got in his way. And eventually he got into the contract killing business for the mob. Really, Gibbs, this is a guy that literally made a living out of killing people.
Yeah. Well, there's contract killers everywhere, man.
You would know.
There's a website for it.
I think of you kind of like Deadpool.
Yeah.
You know, there's that special bar.
There is. There actually is.
Or John Wick. It's like John Wick yeah. / Deadpool.
Yeah. You just got to know where to go.
Yeah.
Got to know the handshake.
But to me, you know, just because Kuklinski was killing people for the mob and it was kind of his job, I don't think that means he didn't enjoy it. I think he did enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, he did it so long that...
You know, yeah, he did it for a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, so let's hear a clip. This is Kuklinski being asked in one of the great HBO documentaries. I think there was two that they did interviewing him, and we'll have some clips from him, but asking him how many people he has killed and what his thoughts were on the killings.
How many people have you killed?
I mean, an approximate guess.
approximately will go with more than 100.
How do you feel about killing?
I don't. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me at all. I don't have a feeling one way or the other.
So that was Kuklinski saying, well, at least 100.
Yeah.
You know, approximately.
Somewhere around there or north of.
Yeah, I think in another part, maybe he said 200. Not in this clip, but in another part of the interview. But, you know, I guess that's one of the things about Richard Kuklinski for me is, well, there's a couple. Number one, how many people did this guy really kill?
Sure.
You know, I do think it's a pretty large number. I think he said at one point, Gibbs, that he may have killed as many as 50 people before he even got into working with the mob.
Oh, before he began.
Yeah. Now, again, with a guy like this, how much is exaggeration? He likes to talk.
He does. But if you listen to what he said, I mean, he said, it's no big deal.
Mm-mm.
I don't have any feelings about it either way. To him, it's punching the time card, right? Going in. I got a job to do. I'm going to do it. Get done. Go grab me a sandwich, maybe a beer, go home. It's just all in the day's work.
And I truly feel like that, you know, that's the way he felt. You know, kind of like maybe you and I might mow the grass. Got to mow the grass.
I don't know if I'm that happy about mowing the grass or.
Yeah, why, was he happy? I don't know. Was he happy about killing? He said he didn't feel anything.
Yeah, no, I don't think he was happy. I don't think he was sad either. I think you're right. I think he was just like, something I got to do.
Yeah.
Let's get it done. The sooner I get it done, the sooner I can get my day going the way I want.
But it's interesting. It's interesting. And again, like I said, it's a little hard to know what the exact truth is with Richard Kuklinski.
Sure.
But I do think one thing is for certain. He killed a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And he was not a guy that you wanted to cross.
And I think him having that attitude, the I don't care either way, that's how you're able to continue to kill people. You can kill those high numbers because you don't have the guilt afterwards.
Oh, yeah. I don't think he had a single thing eating at him.
Yeah. Because if you did, you know you wouldn't be able to continue that.
Or it'd be much harder.
Exactly.
Yeah, it'd be much harder. But, you know, we're also talking about a guy as an adult, Richard Kuklinski. You know, he's about 6'4", 6'5". Maybe went as high as 3 bills.
Man, that's a big boy.
Yeah, he was a big Buford. And so, like I said, not a guy that you wanted to cross, number one, because he was an imposing figure.
Yeah.
And number two, he didn't hesitate to kill people.
Just call him Big Buford?
Yeah, he's Big Buford.
Walking stick, walking tall or whatever?
Yeah, either that or I think like Hardee's or something, they have a Big Buford.
Do they?
Yeah, I don't know. I started saying that at one point.
Big Buford.
And then there's his nickname, right? We haven't even talked about his nickname yet, the Iceman.
He's cold, man.
Earned because he froze at least one of his victims for a long period of time, maybe years, to try to throw off medical examiners. And I say at least one. I think he did it more, but it happened at least one time.
I also think, I mean, it's not why they named, but I think you could call him the Iceman because the fact that, you know, he didn't have any emotions, feelings. He was just ice.
I agree with you. I think he had ice in his veins. And I think you could call him that because of that as well. So, go ahead.
I mean, you could go a third reason. Maybe before every kill, he turned on a little vanilla.
Vanilla ice?
Mm-hmm.
Ice, baby.
And did that. And that's how he got pumped up.
That's the Iceman. Now, timeline-wise, that's not going to work. Because
Vanilla Ice wasn't even...
No.
Yeah.
He wasn't around, but
I just try to get, because right now somebody's singing Ice Ice Baby in their head.
And that's not good because that's one of those ones you can't get out.
I know, but I think it's funny because I know there's somebody doing it right now.
Oh, I guarantee.
And they're cursing you.
What? I'm not the one who said it. You said it. All right. So like we enjoy doing, let's get into Richard's childhood a little bit. Let's see what's in there. What could have caused him to take to murder so easily, because I think he did.
He did.
Richard Leonard Kuklinski was born April 11th, 1935, in the Polish section of Jersey City, New Jersey. His parents were immigrants, one Polish, one Irish. His mother, Anna, worked in a meat packing plant, and his father, Stanley, worked on the railroad. Now, Stanley was a pretty violent alcoholic. And man, how many times do we hear that?
You hear it a lot.
It's almost like every episode.
Yeah.
That these killers have either one or both parents that are violent alcoholics. They're both verbally and physically abusive.
Where's all the happy alcoholics in these stories?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's what you want. If you're going to be the alcoholic, you want to be the happy alcoholic.
So Richard had three siblings. He had one older and two younger, and all of them were routinely beaten by both of his parents, not just one.
Oh, mom got on.
Oh, yeah. Mom got in on the act as well, and he talks about it here in a minute. So I think a very tough environment to grow up in, right? So tough, in fact, that it's thought that their father, Stanley, killed the oldest boy. And so, you know, Richard's older brother, by beating him to death. And the way that the story goes is the police showed up and the family said that this boy had fallen down the stairs, when in reality, it is believed that Stanley, the dad, beat this boy, and whether purposefully or not,
right,
caused his death. So thanks, mom and dad, for that.
Today, that'd be an HBO special. Be called The Falling Down the Stairwell, or Netflix.
One of the two. You're going to get a special out of something.
Yeah.
So let's hear Richard talk a little bit about his parents.
With Stanley, it didn't really matter whether he was drinking or he wasn't drinking. He was a nasty son of a bitch, and he always will be until the day he died. And even when he died, he was a nasty son of a gun.
Did you go to his funeral?
No, I didn't.
Was there one?
Yes. I didn't like him in life. Why would I want to go see him in death? I was glad he was dead.
How about your mom? How was she?
Over the years, I got to dislike my mother a great deal. But now that I have more time to think about it, she was just a victim of her own life.
As a kid, how did you see her?
Hateful. Disliked her a great deal. She didn't believe in sparing a rod either. I mean, she used to hit me with a broomstick if I did something wrong.
Where would she hit you?
Wherever it hit.
Wherever it hit.
Wherever it hit. So, yeah, I think, you know, pretty cold about his dad, but obviously he didn't like his dad. His dad was not a good guy.
No.
But what a quote. I didn't like him in life. Why would I go see him in death?
Sure.
So Richard began killing animals at a young age. He has said that he especially enjoyed killing the cats in the neighborhood. And we know, Gibbs, now even more than I did back then when I did episode 2, that is a very bad sign.
It's a really bad sign.
You know, a lot of the killers that we've profiled over the years have tortured or killed small animals like squirrels, birds, cats, dogs, you name it, as a child. And I think a lot of these people have killed animals and have showed very little remorse in doing so, right? It's not like they, you know, Richard Kuklinski killed a cat and then he felt bad after he did it. You know, these were kind of remorseless acts for these types of people. Richard was an altar boy growing up, just like you.
Just like me.
But he didn't like school a whole lot.
Yeah, you end up dropping out.
Yeah, he dropped out in the 8th grade.
Unlike me.
Unlike you.
I went one grade further.
He made it to the 9th grade.
That's right.
But it was around this time that Richard claimed he committed his first murder. So, you know, we're talking 13, 14 years old here, right? When you're in the 8th grade. And the story goes that there was this gang of teenagers. They had been harassing Richard. They had been bullying him for some time. And it was after this one beating. So they beat him up pretty good. After that, he decided he was going to make his stand. So we talked about it. He wasn't a small guy.
No.
Probably even in the 8th grade, he was not a small guy.
Yeah, he had to be a pretty big boy.
Yeah, to get to be 6'5", you know, 3 bills. He was pretty big as an 8th grader. So he attacked this gang leader. Kind of tracked him down, hit him with, you know, like a thick piece of wood, beat him until he ultimately died.
Yeah.
I don't know if he meant to do that or not. but he did kill this kid. Now, one thing that Richard has said after the boy died, he pulled out all his teeth and he snipped off his fingers before he threw his body off a bridge in South Jersey.
So smart.
That's pretty smart for a 13, 14-year-old kid. It's also pretty organized, right?
Yeah.
For your first murder.
Organized and just, it's a little skill set you have to have.
Right. A lot of forethought.
Yeah.
Planning to think about, I don't want this body to be identified.
It's not easy pulling teeth. It's not easy snipping fingers off.
No, no. And I will take your word on both of them because I've never done either, but...
It's repetitive. It gets a little tiresome.
You got to have some upper body strength.
You too.
To really yank some of that stuff out.
Yeah.
But he wasn't done, right? Richard tracked down the other members of the gang, beat them all severely with a metal pole. I mean, this is rough. This is one kid standing up to a gang of teenagers. I'm not sure, Gibbs, that you get picked on a whole lot after word of this gets around.
No, I'm pretty sure people are like, don't mess with that kid.
Yes. Like I mean, that. He killed the leader and he beat beat all the other kids up severely.
It's like that movie 3 o'clock High or whatever. Nobody wanted to mess with the big boy.
What's 3 o'clock High?
I think it was called 3 o'clock High.
You know, the one I like is My Bodyguard.
Is that the one with the big guy in it?
Where he rented the big guy with the green army jacket?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. Well, then what the hell is 3 o'clock High?
Did they meet at 3 o'clock High? Have the big fight.
You think the name of the high school is 3 o'clock?
No.
You're like calling it 3 o'clock high.
3 o'clock when the clock hits 3 o'clock high.
You were high at 3 o'clock?
I'm
totally confused. Are you high now? Let's get that out of the way first.
I have not been drinking and I have not been doing.
Yeah. 3 o'clock high.
3 o'clock high.
No, I think the one you're talking about is My Bodyguard.
I think you're right.
Did the guy have a big like green army jacket?
Yeah.
So like we said, right, you're not going to get messed with after you do something like this. But what came out of this is Richard talking about his feelings of this first murder much later on. He said he felt empowered. He was in control, maybe for the first time in his life.
No, I believe that. I mean, I don't know how many fights you've been in, but you know how it is when you get done. Yeah, when you're done with a fight that you won, you feel pretty damn good.
Yeah, you asked me how many I was in. You didn't ask me how many I won.
Well, I didn't want to go there. I know. You know.
Yeah, he felt like he was in control. I think this was huge. This was a turning point in his life because it was this type of power. I would almost call it swagger, Gibbs, that Kuklinski would carry on with him as an adult. And I think from this point forward, he didn't take any shit. He decided he was going to be in control, and he didn't take it well when he felt that someone else was disrespecting him.
Well, you say, I mean, he certainly developed confidence.
Yes.
And confidence carries a lot of weight, and he knew he could do what needed to be done. So when you have that, you're not afraid of many things. Fear is not something that lingers in your head anymore.
Yeah, and I don't think he was. I don't think he was fearful. You know, as the years went by and he got to be an adult, he began killing people, quite a few. And he talked about the fact that he would kill people that annoyed him, especially like loudmouths in a bar.
Yeah.
Anybody that reminded him of his father, he would kill. And I don't think it took a lot to get under Richard's skin.
There is always that one person that just won't stop, that keeps going.
Oh, that gets going. Under your skin, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
You know, and you're like, say it one more time. One more time. But, you know, we don't do anything.
Meet me at 3 o'clock high.
Yeah, 3 o'clock high. Over by the flagpole. It's going down, man.
You know, he's on the west side of New York City.
Yeah.
And he's running the streets. It's almost as if that place became his testing ground. You know, how tough are you? Well, I think he was pretty damn tough.
You have to be, man.
Or he was good at killing people. You know, it's almost like he was honing his talents.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of the murders that I think he carried out, again, if you believe Richard Kuklinski, I think a lot of those the police took as, you know, vagrants, killing each other, things like that. You know, it wasn't like, oh my gosh, all these people are dying.
Yeah.
This is the west side of New York City. There's people everywhere.
It's just another bad person gone. Yeah.
But there was one instance where Kuklinski said that he killed a group of guys who were messing with him driving down a road in Georgia.
Driving in Georgia one time. And we were riding down a road, and there was a couple of vans running around, and they were hooping and hollering there. I guess they were having a good old time and maybe drinking and whatnot. They decided, I guess it was interesting to play with a guy from New Jersey, and they started to click-clack and with their vans and push me here and push me there off the road, and they were running in and out, and what their problem was, I really don't know. Never did know. But it came to a point where I got extremely mad about that, and but it was silly of me because I was away from home. I had no backing. I had no problem. I only had one weapon, which was in the trunk, which was a .357 with a hair trigger. So I stopped the car and got out, opened the trunk. I had the release and went in the trunk and took the .357 and just stood there. Now, apparently their eyesight mustn't be too good, because I don't think I'd walk up on a guy with a .357 standing by his side. But these fellas did. Foolish mistake. They all died.
Well, I certainly wouldn't walk up to somebody with a .357 on their side.
No, I wouldn't either. I wouldn't either. But again, I mean, I think this is one of those things, right? Richard Kuklinski is being interviewed for this, you know, these documentaries that ultimately came out on HBO. How much of this is real? How much of this is bravado, him telling stories?
Right.
I think there's actually some pictures of these boys in Georgia. So I'm pretty sure this one happened.
Right.
Or he somehow knew about this in Georgia and used it as his own.
Took claim to it.
And I would bet on the former rather than the latter.
Yeah. One thing I would say, he's very calm about telling the story.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe he was probably very calculated when he decided that he was going to go ahead and pull the trigger.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And it's actually fascinating to sit and listen to him, you know, kind of like an Ed Kemper or somebody. Yeah. You just can't believe the words that are coming out of their mouth.
Because, you know, when you're handling a gun like that, confidence is key. And you have to be, I mean, if you're all panicky, there's a pretty good chance you're going to miss your target.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean,
you have to be steady. You have to be calm. You have to keep your nerves under control for sure.
Yeah. So if you're,
especially if you're going to shoot a bunch of people at one time.
Exactly. You know, so.
And I know you know from experience, but.
Well, no, you do, but not me.
Now, I actually do know a lot about shooting under pressure.
Yeah.
Not actually shooting a person, but shooting targets. And, and I think, like you said, confidence, you know, I would use the word nerves. You know, steadiness, all that, it's key, right? If you get jumpy, it doesn't take much at all for a bullet to go off of from the intended target. Just the slightest flinch.
Especially with that hair trigger.
The hair trigger. All right, Gibbs, let's take a break and talk about our sponsors. Hey, TCAT folks, are you looking to freshen up your snack game? Well, Perfect Bar has you covered. They have a whole lineup of fresh from the fridge protein snacks that you and your family will love. Perfect Bar is the original refrigerated protein bar. Yeah, I said it, refrigerated. It means they're free from chemical preservatives and they're stored in the fridge for optimal taste and texture. They're made from freshly ground nut butter and organic honey. These things have up to 17 grams of whole food protein, 20 organic superfoods. They have a cookie dough-like texture. And they're just as nutritious as they are delicious. They have a wide variety of flavors, dark chocolate peanut butter, coconut peanut butter, which is my favorite, and almond butter. They even have some seasonal ones like pumpkin pie and chocolate mint. And right now, Perfect Bar is offering 15% off your online order. Just go to perfectbar.com/TCAT. Shop their refrigerated snacks at perfectbar.com/TCAT today to get 15% off your order. We want you to be seasonally prepared. So go to perfectbar.com/TCAT to stock up and save 15%. You know what? Between hitting the gym, eating cleaner, or learning a new skill, there's a lot of ways that we can better ourselves in the new year, but I can't think of one that's more important than starting the year off tackling high-interest credit card debt. Our friends at Upstart.com are here to help. Upstart is the revolutionary lending platform that offers smarter rates to help you pay off high-interest credit card debt. They go beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter rate. Upstart believes that you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you, and they make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate. And because it's a soft pull, it won't affect your credit score. The hard pull only occurs if you accept your rate. And the best part is that once your loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot. And hurry to upstart.com/TCAT to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes. That's upstart.com/TCAT. So we fast forward, Richard's working in the porn business. I mean, not like you, Gibbs, he's not in front of the camera, but you know, it was through this enterprise that he got into business with the Gambino crime family. And specifically one of their chief enforcers, Roy DeMeo. Can't believe you let me run through that porn thing and didn't say a word.
Roy DeMeo.
I mean, this was a bad guy in his own right. I think he killed a lot of people over the years, Roy did. He was not a guy to mess with either. According to Kuklinski, DeMeo took him out one day in his car. They parked on a city street. Roy had selected a random target. This is a man walking his dog. And he ordered Kuklinski to kill this man.
Just random.
Random.
I'm going to see how dedicated you are.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. He was testing him. He wanted to see how far Kuklinski would go. And without hesitating, Richard got out, walked towards the man, and shot him in the back of the head as he passed by. So I think that showed Roy right there. You know, this is a guy that could be very valuable. And it was really from that point, you know, moving forward, that Richard became one of DeMeo's kind of like favorite guys. You know, if Roy needed somebody killed, chances are he was probably going to call Richard. And here's Richard talking about not that hit, but a particular hit that he was paid to carry out.
This guy taking care of. But he wanted to talk to him first. So when I got to the place, I asked the man for the money. So the guy says he didn't have it and Roy would just have to wait until he got the money to pay him. And that was that. He'd have to wait. So I said to the man, I said, well, you have to then talk to him. He wants to talk to you. So I dialed the phone number. And he got on the phone, and I said, he wants to talk to you. So he was talking to him. And I guess they were acting like everything was all right because he got off the phone. He handed me the phone back. He says, hey, I told you he'd wait. He's in the frame of mind. Don't worry about it. He wants to talk to you now. So I picked up the phone, and he said, kill him.
You better have Roy DeMeo's money.
Yeah.
Is the lesson that I'm taking from that one.
That's what you learned from that.
In 1961. Richard married a woman named Barbara, and the pair would have three children together. And Barbara, over the years, has described their relationship in a number of different ways. She has said that they lived the all-American, affluent, suburban family life at their New Jersey home. She's also been quoted as saying that Richard tried to smother her with a pillow.
Oh, there you go.
Pointed guns at her, tried to run her over with the car, and hit her so hard, Gibbs, on three different occasions that he broke her nose.
Okay.
Three different times.
Right. But she stayed with him.
Well, according to her, there was the good Richie and the bad Richie. The good Richie was the provider, right? Made the money, paid the bills, put the roof over everybody's head, made sure there was food on the table, gave them a very nice, comfortable life. But the bad Richie would come out, and he could be extremely abusive, verbally, physically abusive, not only to Barbara, but to the kids as well.
Yeah, like the Warriors come out.
The Warriors?
The movie The Warriors.
Okay. I didn't know what Lions.
The Warriors.
It didn't even come out.
That's what the guy says. Warriors.
Just meet me at 3 o'clock high and we'll settle the whole thing.
Leave it at that. Yeah.
Now, in 1970, Richard's brother, Joe, his younger brother, he was 25 years old. He stole the dog of a 12-year-old girl.
That's just mean, man.
Well, that's the start of the meanness. But he told the girl that he had found her dog. So he essentially tricked her into following him to the roof of the building. And it was there that Joseph Kuklinski raped and murdered this 12-year-old girl. And after that, he threw her body and the dog off of the roof to the street. And it said it was about 40 feet.
Jeez.
This was very brutal.
Sounds worse than his brother.
And this is Richard's younger brother. The dog survived and started howling, and that alerted some of the neighbors. And obviously, they found the young girl. She did not survive. But it didn't take police long, right? They apprehended Joseph. He confessed. When they got him to the local jail,
this is the part I like,
it was said that the guards encouraged some of the bigger inmates,
sure,
to beat the living shit out of him. And they did.
Which I'm glad.
And the guard sat there and said, okay, I'm not going to do anything.
No.
You raped and killed a 12-year-old girl.
You deserve what you get.
He was ultimately convicted and given a life sentence for the rape and murder of this 12-year-old girl. And I guess the reason I bring it up is, so two killers from the same family,
yeah,
you cannot tell me that their childhood didn't play some type of factor.
Yeah, it's factor of environment, man.
Yeah, environment, nature versus nurture, all of that stuff.
Yeah,
you know, that you and I talk about on our episodes, it had to have. All right, so we get back to Richard. He's enforcing for the mob. He's killing people left and right. At the same time, he's playing house in the Jersey suburbs the whole time. No one around him, not his family, not his friends, neighbors, no one. No one really knew what this guy was up to.
It's like you're talking to the guy next door to you.
Yeah.
Hey, man, how's it going? He's like,
F you. And he walks inside.
Yeah. And you're like, hey, he seems like a nice guy.
Yeah. I have a problem with that guy.
But yeah, he gets ice delivered to his place all the time.
Hey, I wonder what he's doing with all that ice.
I don't know. I thought he had like a snow shack or something.
It's like a mystery.
He don't have one.
Maybe he's got a Hawaiian ice thing that he likes to eat. Yeah, in his basement. So all these people. And this includes his wife, right? They know he's abusive to, you know, with inside the family, but everybody around him just thinks he's this successful businessman. But you know, Gibbs, being a hitman and an enforcer for the mob, that's not an 8-to-5 job.
No.
It's kind of like podcasting. It's not an 8-to-5 job.
It's definitely not 8-to-5.
Sometimes there's things that need to be done, and it doesn't matter what time it is.
Just got to do it.
Right. If Roy DeMeo calls you at 2:30 in the morning and says, I need you to go whack a guy.
You say, okay, DeMeo.
Okay, first of all, I want to make sure we're talking about killing someone.
Right.
Because I got to have that down.
Yeah.
I got to make that perfectly clear.
Crystal clear.
Kuklinski had that issue, right? He would have to leave sometimes in the middle of the night, sometimes right in the middle of dinner. He would get a call and he would have to go take care of something.
I wonder if they have code words.
Probably.
Like,
I think whack was a code word for some of them.
I need you to go throw the fish in the river.
Maybe.
Something.
Maybe. I wonder this, Gibbs, about his wife. It's always kind of been said that she didn't know. She had no idea. I think later on, right, after she finds out exactly what Richard has been doing for so many years and years, it has to dawn on her. She has to look back at some of the things, you know, running out in the middle of dinner, getting a call at 3 o'clock in the morning. Some of those things now all of a sudden probably make sense.
I mean, if you found out, you kind of suspicious, but then you ran across some stuff, you're like, man, Gibbs has killed 43 people. You know, not 42, not 44, 43.
Right.
Would you say anything? Or are you just like, you know what? Some things are just best left unsaid.
I don't know for sure. Right. I just have a sneaking suspicion. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I don't have any concrete evidence.
No concrete. You just seen some things that you thought it starts adding up and you do these flashbacks and things are like, oh yeah, I remember when I was at that storage facility with him.
I already think that.
Yeah.
But until I have some concrete evidence, what am I going to do?
That's true.
Nothing.
Yeah. Why is there a wood chipper in his shed? I don't know.
I'll let you live your life, man. Now, after Kuklinski is caught, right, the authorities that study him, they find him to be a little unusual as compared to a lot of the mobsters and killers that they've come across. Number one, the guy's not a huge drinker, not into drugs, didn't cheat on his wife, didn't really gamble. It wasn't like he was just out doing a bunch of mobster type stuff, like you think of Goodfellas.
Right.
He's just out killing people, which was part of Goodfellas too, but all the other stuff, right? The drinking, the sleeping around, the gambling. That just really wasn't his thing, apparently. But you have to think, working with Roy DeMeo, that was a scary thing. He was a very volatile guy. And eventually, Roy fell out of favor with the Gambino crime family. So much so that they put a hit out on him. And he was found shot to death in the trunk of his own car in January of 1983. Now, I think Kuklinski has hinted from time to time back in the day that he maybe had something to do with it. But I don't think that's true. I think most people believe it was another hitman.
Could have been.
But again, why would he not want to take credit for it?
Well, that's true.
You know?
Yeah.
I think he probably took credit for things that he didn't do. Richard, when he got into the 1980s, he started to get sloppy. He was kind of trying to work on his own some, kind of start his own rackets, ways to make money. But he got a little sloppy. He killed a guy named George Maliband. And Maliband was a guy that Kuklinski knew from the pornography business.
Yeah.
You know him, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know George.
Yeah, GM.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You called him GM, sure, back in the day. In early 1980, Kuklinski had vouched for this guy, George Maliband, to Roy DeMeo. And I don't know how, gambling or whatever, Maliband racked up a bunch of debt to Roy. And because Kuklinski had vouched for him, this debt was falling back on Richard. Well, obviously, he didn't like that. This guy, George, wasn't paying his debts. And then George made the worst mistake that anyone could make with Richard Kuklinski. He made a veiled threat in the car while they were driving to see Roy DeMeo. And the threat was kind of towards his family, basically saying, hey, I know where you live.
Yeah.
To Richard Kuklinski. That's not the smartest thing in the world.
That's just not the smartest thing at all.
Because, and what we may talk about a little bit later, I don't think Richard cared about anything except for his family. I think that is the one thing he truly cared about. So if you're going to make a threat, even veiled, against them, it's not going to end well for you. Mm-mm. And it didn't end well for George Maliband either. Richard pulled the car over and shot this guy with a .38 revolver. So he's in the car. He has a dead body.
Not just a dead body. Pretty big dead body.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty big, right? So Richard was big, but this George Maliband was like 6'3", maybe went three bills himself.
Yeah.
Three hundo.
Always remember him as a pretty big guy.
Yeah. George was. I mean, he was a big guy to be in porn, to be honest with you. You don't see that many guys of that stature in the porn game. But Richard's got to figure out how to dispose of this big guy's body. So what he decides is that he's going to put him into a 55-gallon drum. Well, that's not easy. He literally has to force this guy, bending him like a, you know, in half, like you'd bend a Barbie.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like a, one of those G.I. Joes or something.
Be a real, real difficult task for sure.
And then trying to stuff him down in this 55-gallon drum. Well, he got him in. But he had problem with the legs. So he started breaking the legs. And then he figured, well, I got to cut some things. He started cutting like behind the knee. I mean, just cutting whatever he could to try to get this guy all of his body parts in this 55-gallon drum. But he finally got the top on, he secured it, and he essentially rolled it off the side of a big cliff. Sometime later, a guy that owned the building that was at the bottom of this big, huge cliff, he notices this dented 55-gallon drum. The lid had popped off in this 60-foot tumble, and the guy was looking at it, and there was something sticking out. And as he got closer, he realized it was two bloody human legs sticking out of this 55-gallon drum.
It's a sight to see.
Sure, sure. So he ran, you know, got the police out there. But this is why I say that Richard got sloppy, because police were able to trace the identity of this person, George Maliband. And when they talked to George's brother, he said, well, I know he was seriously afraid of this guy named Richard Kuklinski. So that's kind of how Richard got on police radar. He's a suspect. They can't prove he did it, but he's a suspect.
He's a suspect. Person of interest?
Person of interest, sure. Now we have to talk about Robert Prongay. I think this guy is kind of a fascinating guy in his own right.
Yeah.
He was a hitman.
Yeah.
They called him Mr. Softy because he drove around the Mr. Softy truck.
You have a similar nickname. I've heard your wife call you that.
Oh, that's wrong. That is so wrong. So he's driving around in this truck handing out treats for kids. He's also a hitman, so it's kind of his cover. But he and Kuklinski kind of get to be friends. And, you know, apparently Richard learned a lot from this guy. This guy was really into using cyanide to murder his victims. He was also like into demolitions and things like that.
Imagine you're at the kill club and you're like just sitting around, like having some beers with the other killers, you know, just trading stories, you know, trying to outdo each other. Like, yeah, you think that was really bad? Let me tell you, there's this one time.
Swapping stories?
Yeah.
Swapping horror stories of hits that went wrong.
Yeah.
Sure.
Exactly.
I can see it would happen. So I think for a number of years, and I don't know how many years, but for a number of years, this guy, Prongay, he was kind of important in Richard's life.
Kind of like a development coach?
I don't know. Yeah, you know, he learned some things. He learned different ways to kill. They might have pulled off some hits together. In July of 1981, a man named Louis Masgay left his home in Pennsylvania. He had about $95,000 with him. He was a partner of Richard Kuklinski. You know, I don't know. They were doing something with this $95,000. Obviously, some type of illegal business where he was going to make a huge profit.
Right.
Well, he never came home. They found his abandoned van on Route 17 in Bergen County. And again, this is where I say, you know, I think Richard was getting a little sloppy. You know, somebody came forward and said that they later saw this Louis Masgay's body hanging in a warehouse owned by Richard Kuklinski. You know, it was thought that Prongay helped him carry this out. But the biggest thing with this one was that Masgay's body was not found for 2 years. So this is the body that they tried to freeze. And many people believe that it was kept in the Mr. Softy truck for like years.
Oh, man.
Frozen.
People thinking back in their head how many times they got a Mr. Softy from that vehicle.
Exactly.
Got more than a Mr. Softy.
So eventually, Kuklinski was going to dispose of this body, right? Masgay's body. 2 years later, so like 1983, it's found over the Jersey border in New York. The body had been shot. It had been wrapped in some plastic garbage bags. Now, one thing that was very odd right from the beginning was that this guy's wearing the same clothes he left in that day in 1981.
Right.
So that's pretty strange, because the medical examiner said this body's pretty fresh. So how has this guy been gone for 2 years?
Yeah.
Has not changed his clothes in 2 years, but yet his body's fresh. It wasn't until they started the autopsy that they discovered inside the body ice crystals on, you know, some of the tissue, and that gave it away.
Then they knew.
Then they knew that the body had been frozen. And the big thing is, if Kuklinski had just waited just a little bit for the body to completely thaw, it would have worked.
Could have got away with it.
There's no way that anybody would have been able to tell, is what the thought process was. So eventually they identified this Maskey through fingerprints. And again, there was an immediate connection to Richard Kuklinski because he's killing people that he knows, right? All of a sudden. That's why I'm saying this guy starts making mistakes. He's doing things differently. He killed George, who he was friendly with. Now he kills a business partner, an illegal business partner, but a business partner in Maskey, people can put the two of them together. He becomes an even bigger suspect. And this is when the police start calling him the Iceman. But again, they don't have enough to arrest him, put him away. So Kuklinski's always on the lookout for new ways to profit, to make money from killing people. It's kind of his thing, right? It's how he supported his family. So there was this pharmacist named Paul Hoffman. And this guy wanted to make a bunch of money by buying illegally some drugs on the cheap and then reselling them through his pharmacy.
Oh, get the bigger profit
through
the drug. Yeah.
And one of them in particular was Tagamet.
Oh, remember Tagamet?
Yeah. I thought that was like an over-the-counter drug now. Maybe it is.
Probably is now. Back then.
But back then, you know, this guy was ready to buy $25,000 worth of Tagamet.
Yeah. You know how that stuff is. I mean, it's fresh on the market.
Yeah.
Everybody
when
wants.
It just comes
like,
out.
It's like that blue pill you take now that you buy off the, not behind the counter now.
So this is the afternoon of April 29th, 1982. This deal is going to go down, right? $25,000 worth of Tagamet.
This is funny,
Tagamet,
man,
is like an acid or what do you call it?
Yeah, heartburn.
Anti-heartburn medication. So Hoffman gave Kuklinski this $25,000. And it was at that point that Kuklinski said, it's not real. I don't have the pills. And he killed this Paul Hoffman. He would admit to it later. You know, shot him.
Beat him.
Beat him.
Yeah.
With a tire iron. And then,
this is the best part,
he stuck him in another 55-gallon steel drum.
Yeah.
And poured cement in there.
Yeah, and when I say best part, it's sad. It's just,
no, sure.
Yeah, I can't believe he thinks this stuff and follows it through.
But then, so that's not even the most outlandish part of it. It's not like he dropped the drum into the ocean or a lake or something like that. He basically set it outside a motel next to this hot dog stand, which is where you would put your dead body.
That's
in a,
where should I put, I know what, I'll put 55 gallon drum. Hot dog stand.
So this is in Little Ferry, New Jersey. I guess from what Kuklinski has said, he would go from time to time to the hot dog stand, get a hot dog, and see if somebody had found his barrel.
He was just curious.
He's just wondering if somebody was ever going to find it. Now, eventually one day he goes to get a hot dog and the barrel's gone. Apparently somebody had moved it. But the strange thing is, to this day, this guy, Paul Hoffman's body has never been found.
That's really weird.
So somebody took it.
Maybe the city guys came by, said, this is, get this out of here. Take it to the dump.
And they took it to the dump. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. So couple of mistakes.
He died. I then took him and put him in a 50-gallon drum, put it on the side of a motel. It was behind Harry's Corner. I listened to the people. I went in Harry's every morning. The thing was there for a long time. I looked at it every day. It was there. I went in Harry's every day. One day it was just missing. Continued to go in Harry's to see if anything was said about it. Nothing was said. I don't know what happened to the drum.
You know, he talks about it pretty nonchalant, man.
Sure.
Just what happened. I just woke up, ate some breakfast.
Shot a guy.
Yeah. Took a stroll, went home.
Put him in a drum.
Yeah.
Lost the drum. Oh, well.
Yeah. Such is life.
You know, springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. Springtime also means more time outside and away from home. And I trust SimpliSafe. I love the myriad of features that they offer. And I love the price. SimpliSafe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. The system blankets your whole home in protection. There are so many sensors, from detecting break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, they have a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. So you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. There's no contract, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. SimpliSafe has given Gibby and I and many of our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/TCAT. That's simplisafe.com/TCATT. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. True crime all the time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. So I think he's really making some mistakes. And then on December 27th, 1982, the decomposed body of 37-year-old Gary Smith was discovered under a bed in a room at the York Hotel. This is in North Bergen, New Jersey. Gary Smith and Kuklinski, they ran together. They pulled jobs together. They were into auto theft, along with another man named Daniel Deppner. And you know, it would come out that Kuklinski and Deppner decided that they had to get rid of this Gary Smith guy, which they did on December 23rd. They fed him cyanide-laced hamburgers while they were all three in the room at this hotel. But apparently this guy didn't die as quickly as Richard Kuklinski thought he would. So he had Deppner strangle Smith with a lamp cord. And Deppner's ex-wife, Barbara, was supposed to be, you know, coming with a car. They were going to move this body. And I guess she never showed up. So they just stuck the body underneath the mattress in this hotel room and left.
That's what you do, man.
Yeah.
Just cut out a little hole, shove them in.
Can you imagine renting this room? Because it was said, Gibbs, that over the next 4 days, the room was rented out to people. And of course, they thought there was like a, you know, kind of a strange smell.
Sure.
Going on.
Thought some rodent died in the wall or something.
But apparently, they didn't think to look under the bed, they would have seen a dead body.
Yeah.
Imagine finding out that you slept in there, you had some coitus. Interruptus and
coitus interruptus.
The whole time, there's somebody dead underneath the bed.
That's definitely strange, though. It would be a conversation starter.
And so this is one where, you know, and I talk about Dr. Michael Bodden a lot. Michael Bodden, the forensic pathologist, he reviewed this case, and I think at one point he came out and said that if they would have just let this guy die due to the cyanide, it's possible that the death would have been attributed to something natural, you know, heart attack, whatever.
Right.
But because Kuklinski couldn't wait, he got so impatient, he had this other guy strangle him with the lamp cord.
Right.
Well, not too hard to tell that you've been strangled with a lamp cord.
No, it's going to be very obvious.
Yeah, those ligature marks are going to stand out. So that alone proved that this guy was murdered. So I mentioned Daniel Deppner, right? He helped kill Gary Smith. You know, this is like the point in time, I think, Gibbs, where Kuklinski is starting to think he needs to get rid of people around him.
Sure.
That know all the things that he's done.
Clean house.
He's cleaning house. He, you know, Deppner's body was found May 14th, 1983 by a, somebody riding their bike. Kuklinski killed Deppner, put his body inside some green garbage bags and dumped it there.
Left it out for the vultures to eat.
He did. You know, when investigators started looking into it, these people were all known cohorts of Richard Kuklinski. They weren't strangers. And that's where it gets very strange. You know, you kill a stranger, that's one thing.
Sure.
In a contract hit or whatever. You start killing all the people that you're friendly with and doing jobs with, and they have family that know who you are. That's something completely different.
Exactly.
You know, and investigators noted that the place where Richard dumped this guy's body, it was like 3 miles from this ranch where his family went all the time. I think they rode horses or did something at this ranch.
Just up the street.
So again, this is just another business associate of Kuklinski's to have been found dead. So he's all over police radar, but they have not been able to get enough evidence to put him away. The next year in 1984, he killed Mr. Softy.
Mr. Softy was no more.
Nope. He killed him. Shot him, had something to do, I believe, with an argument. And again, this Prange guy did something that you shouldn't do, and that was threaten Kuklinski's family. And that was enough, right? That's enough to get you killed
every day.
And he shot Robert Prange or Mr. Softy, and he basically left him in the truck. He was found inside his Mr. Softy truck. In the garage that he kept it in. The problem was the garage that he kept it in was right across the street from a garage owned by Kuklinski. And again, the two were known associates. So we fast forward to 1985. They have got to figure out how to get this Richard Kuklinski. They put together a task force, right? You got to have a task force.
Always should have a task
force. Always, if you can't do it any other way, you got to have a task force.
Sometimes I build a task force to build things.
You put together a task force? You said you build a task force.
I build the task force?
To build other things.
Yeah.
Why don't you build a 3 o'clock high?
I might just.
And then you and I will fight in front of it.
I don't think you want that.
Well, I'm going to bring my bodyguard.
Oh, I'm still confident.
So 85, what the task force came up with, and it's really kind of brilliant. They got an ATF special agent who worked undercover. This guy's name was Dominic Polifron, and he was able to get close to Richard Kuklinski, and it really wasn't all that hard. The guy was posing as a fellow hitman by the name of Dominic Michael Provenzano, which I feel like if you were going to be a hitman, that's the last name you would pick.
That's actually that whole
the whole thing, right? Dominic Provenzano. It's
just a strong Italian name.
You'd say it in like a Chef Boyardee voice, but that's the name you would pick.
Or I could say it, you know.
So Polifron got close to Kuklinski. And at one point, he wanted to hire him for a hit. And they're talking on the phone a lot, right? About, hey, I need you to take care of this for me. What Richard doesn't know is that Dominic is taping all these calls. So Richard is going through, telling Dominic in detail about how he's going to carry out these hits. And I mean, I think investigators were shocked at how much information Richard was giving Dominic. I mean, a guy that essentially Gibbs, he had not known all that long. This was not a lifelong friend.
Just too comfortable giving out details. Yeah.
This is a guy that he thought was another hitman. So he's talking about his strategies.
Got sloppy.
Yeah. I think he really got sloppy in the last 2, 3, 4 years of his freedom.
But even the best ones do.
They do. It was on December 17th, 1986, that it was arranged for Kuklinski to meet Dom to get some cyanide for this hit, right, that he was going to carry out. And apparently, Dom told Kuklinski that it was a undercover police detective. That's who he was going to take out. And Richard said, no problem. No biggie.
I got this.
Yeah. So they pick up this cyanide, and at some point, Richard tests it on a stray animal.
You remember how hard it used to be to get cyanide, man?
Yeah, very hard.
Yeah.
Are you saying it's not anymore?
No, I'm just saying you remember how hard it was
yeah.
to get it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, sure. Okay. So he tests it on this animal. Nothing happens, right? He realizes it's not poison. And one of the things I haven't talked about is, and I think he got this from Mr. Softy. Kuklinski found out that you could take this cyanide, put it in like a cleaner spray bottle.
Right.
Dilute it a little bit and spray it in somebody's face and freaking kill them. You'd just be walking by and just
absorbs in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he had it in this bottle. I think he sprayed this dog.
So everybody knows.
Yeah.
Mike is acting like he's spraying a bottle at my face.
And I'm literally like halfway to your face.
Yeah, like if it could spray on me, it would be spraying on me.
I got my hand fully extended. Yeah. He's moving
his fist and his fingers, like he's pumping the trigger.
That's what a lot of people said about the video. It's like, man, you really do talk with your hands a lot. I like to act out shit. And
he's doing it too.
If there's gunplay, sometimes I'll pull the trigger.
I'm just happy there was an actual bottle up there. I think you would actually be squirting me now.
So he squirts this dog. Nothing happens. He realizes this is not poison. It's not cyanide. So he didn't know what to do. He's going to go through with this hit, but now he doesn't because he knows something's up. So they move in. They arrest him a few hours later. His wife is with him. They find a gun in the car. They ultimately charge his wife with trying to resist arrest or keep them from arresting him.
Okay.
Law enforcement authorities have arrested one of the most notorious contract killers in state history. A self-employed Bergen County man is behind bars, charged with 5 murders, and prosecutors are investigating his involvement in dozens more.
This is unwarranted, unnecessary. These guys watch too many movies.
So I like that one because that's actually Kuklinski after he was arrested, and he's saying, you know, what are they arresting me for? These guys just watch too many movies. I'm not a hitman.
I'm not a hitman. They're crazy.
But obviously, it's all going to come out, right? Prosecutors charged him with 5 murders, 6 weapons violations, some attempted murder, robbery, attempted robbery. I think it was 19 counts in all.
It was, man.
That could have led up to minimum like 300 years in prison.
Maybe even the death penalty.
Could have, right. Yeah, possibly the death penalty. I guess they figured out that he had pretty large sums of money in a Swiss bank account.
Smart.
He had some reservations to leave the country because I think he knew something was up.
He could feel it.
He just knew something wasn't right. So they put him in the Bergen County Jail. He's in there on $2 million bail. This is what blew me away, Gibbs. Incredibly, somehow, this guy had no criminal record. He had killed like people since he was 14 years old, had never been convicted of anything that would stick to his record.
Escaped everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think he was really good at what he did for many, many years.
Until he got sloppy.
And it really wasn't until the last, like I said, 3, 4, 5 years, however many it was.
And I say they all get sloppy. We know they do.
Eventually they do. And he did. But up until then, you know, it's kind of like the question, was he really that good? Was he that smart? Was he really lucky?
No, I think to do it as long as he did.
It's more than luck,
it's
right?
Skill. It's definitely skill.
I think so too. You know, I don't think his luck ran out. I think he just...
complacent.
Yeah. He thought he was too good. He thought he could never get caught.
Like Israel Keyes got complacent.
Sure, everybody does. You know? Even the smartest serial killers do.
Guy in Indiana. Baumbauer, Herb.
Baumeister.
Herb.
So they've got him though, right? They have him, all these conversations of him talking about killing people. with cyanide. He talked about freezing bodies to confuse medical examiners. Now, what is strange is on these tapes, it's not like he's coming out and saying, I killed Robert Prange. I killed this person, and this person. But he's giving enough information where they're able to try to link him.
Sure.
But it's circumstantial. And that's going to be the issue at trial. You know, he goes to trial in January of 88 for the murders of Daniel Deppner and Gary Smith. I'm assuming those are the two that they had the most on him about. So you had Dr. Michael Bodden testified, as did Dominic Polifrone, and a jury ultimately found Kuklinski guilty of two murders. But like I said, on what was really very circumstantial evidence.
It's really all it was.
Yeah, they didn't have a lot of concrete evidence, but they had enough circumstantial
evidence. And enough to get him a life sentence.
Yeah, and I think it's probably why they were not able to get the death penalty. You know, it's not like they had an eyewitness that could say, I saw Richard Kuklinski kill so-and-so. So they got, you know, life sentences, not the death penalty, but...
Yeah, but they weren't done either.
No, they're not done. They were going to go after him for the murders of George Maliban, Louis Mazgay, and Paul Hoffman.
But they're pretty smart about this one.
Oh, I think it's very smart. Right? They don't want to go through a whole nother trial. That's going to be expensive.
Right.
It's going to cost the taxpayers a bunch of money. So they played on what they knew was really the only thing in the world that Richard Kuklinski actually cared about, and that was his family. So they said that they would drop the charges against his wife, whatever it was, resisting arrest or whatever she had been charged with. But apparently his son had also been charged. He caught some drug and weapon charges. They said that they would drop the charges against him as well. So apparently they stopped his son. They found a gun, I think, but they also found something called a cestus.
Oh, yeah?
You ever heard of a cestus?
I'm not allowed to talk about it.
C-E-S-T-U-S. Never heard of it.
Nope.
Sounds like Festivus for the rest of us.
It does.
The way it was described was it's like a leather band with a bunch of studs on it.
Yeah.
That you either wrap around your knuckles, like a version of brass knuckles, but...
Decorative. When you're not needing it, you wear it around your wrist as a...
Yeah, you actually could. Then you put it on your knuckles and hit somebody with it and do some damage.
That's right.
So it was called a cestus. I've never heard of it. So they're going to drop the charges against his family if he pleads guilty and tells them everything. And he did. Right? I think he even led them to the bodies. He cooperated. He racked up some more life sentences. In all, I think he was convicted of 5 murders. Consecutive life sentences. Essentially, he was ineligible for parole until I think he was 111 years old.
Something like that.
So if you made it to 111, maybe we will let you out.
Maybe.
Maybe. I think if you make it to 111, Gibbs, Al Roker will come and do something special at the prison.
Do a little shout out.
Willard Scott will probably come back from the dead. Is he alive or dead? I don't know.
I don't know. He's retired.
He's retired. He'll either come out of retirement or back from the dead to wish you a happy 111th birthday. It's not going to happen, right, for a guy like Richard Kuklinski.
Right.
And something that I thought was interesting was that he ended up in the same prison as his brother that we talked about.
What kind of a union that is?
I don't think much of one.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
What if they... dominate the prison or the wing that they're in, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, it's the brothers.
The Kuklinski brothers.
He is such a cold-blooded killer, they call him the Iceman. After being convicted of 2 murders, he confessed to 2 others in court today.
I shot George Maliban 5 times. Louis Mazgay on July 1st, 1981. I shot him once in the back of the head.
So pretty matter of fact, you know, he's just standing up in court and saying, I killed these people.
Yeah, here you go.
In 2003, he pled guilty to the 1980 slang of a guy named Peter Calabro. And Calabro was a New York City police detective. It added 30 years to a sentence. It really didn't mean anything.
Well, but it did probably to
I shouldn't. You're right, Gibbs. I shouldn't say it didn't mean anything. It didn't mean anything in regards to his sentence.
No, not at that point. He was never going to leave.
But for the Calabro family,
yeah.
Which I think is where you were headed,
right.
It probably meant a lot.
Sure.
And so I'm glad you corrected me there. In October 2005. At this point, Richard had been in prison for 17 years. He was diagnosed with a rare disease. It was this inflammation of the blood vessels, and he was transferred to a secure medical center. And this is where, I don't want to say it's comical because the man dies, but apparently he had asked doctors to make sure that they, you know, revived him. Or they asked him if he wanted to be revived, and he said, yeah, right? If he flatlined or whatever, use the paddles, man. You do whatever you got to do. And just about a week before his death, right, the hospital knew he wasn't doing well. They called his wife and said, do you want to rescind those instructions? And she said, no. Kuklinski died March 6, 2006. He was 70 years old. So I don't know, Gibbs. I mean, I think the guy is somewhat fascinating to me. He was a cold-blooded killer. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, yeah. He was very cold-blooded.
He killed in a variety of ways. If you believe some of the things he said, I mean, obviously we're talking about guns. He talked about having this little miniature Derringer that maybe would pop out.
Crossbow action.
Yeah. He's talked about crossbows, some chainsaws. Just a little chainsaw action.
Yeah.
Said he killed some people with hand grenades, maybe. Even talked about attaching bombs to remote-controlled toy cars. That's a scary way to, I mean, that's scary, right? To think, because some of these remote-controlled cars will go 50, 60, 70 miles an hour. Yeah. They get up underneath you as you're going down the highway.
And kaboom.
And just blow you up.
Well, that's one way to go on detective.
But I think his favorite weapon was cyanide.
There you go.
Especially later in his life.
There you go, squeezing the trigger thing again.
Yeah, did I? With the cyanide? Mm-hmm. And again, I talked about it, right? It's a spray bottle. You would kind of just shoot it in the person's face. Something that he had learned from Robert Prongay, Mr. Softy. So in preparation for this episode, Gibbs, I did watch the movie. The Iceman. I don't know if you've seen it. I didn't talk to you about it ahead of time. Have you seen it?
I have not.
It's actually a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
Like a lot of things that you and I talk about, it can't, right, really portray the full measure of Richard Kuklinski. But the movie's good. It has some big time actors in it.
Yeah.
I'd never seen it before. Michael Shannon's really good. I like
Michael Shannon.
He was in Boardwalk Empire.
He's in a lot of things, man. He's good.
Yeah. He was really good. He plays Kuklinski. Ray Liotta.
Yeah.
James Franco. Stephen Dorff. David Schwimmer.
Well, friends. Ross.
Is in it with like this weird mustache playing a character.
Well, Ross, huh?
Winona Ryder plays his wife.
What'd she steal?
Lipstick.
Did she steal something off the set?
No. Oh,
okay.
I thought you were talking about like, what did she steal when she got caught back in the day?
I just out, you know.
Who else? Oh, Chris Evans.
Is it like
Captain America? America. Yeah. He plays Mr. Softy.
Yeah.
So
that hurts a lot of women out there right now.
It's kind of a star-studded cast. There's this one part in the movie that really got me. And it's where Kuklinski is driving with his wife and kids in the car. And I think he either runs into somebody or they get in a scrape between two cars.
Yeah.
And this guy gets out and starts cussing at him and stuff, right? Another reason why in a road rage situation, you better damn well know who you're getting involved with. And there's really no way for you to, so be careful.
Exactly.
He gets out and starts cussing up this prolific contract killer.
Right.
And the guy, Kuklinski, says, you know what, get back in your car or something bad's going to happen or whatever.
Right.
And the guy just won't stop. And I think at one point he threatens his family. Says something about, I'm going to kill you and your whole family or whatever. I can't remember exactly. Yeah. But the part that got me was, that was it. It was like the light switch was flipped to on. Kuklinski chased this guy like around the city.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of myself so much.
I was getting ready to say, why do I sound like this is a story about you?
I know. And I'm watching this thinking, oh my God, is this what I look like?
Yeah.
We got my wife in the car. My kids and his kids were like screaming, yeah. Daddy, stop.
Your girl's back there crying.
I know.
This is the end.
I need to get my life together.
Yeah. You're like, man.
I'm like an applesauce away from being Richard Kuklinski. Yeah.
And right before you start that story, you're like, so you need to be really careful on who you decide you're going to argue with in road rage incident. But then you went into the story and that is exactly you. I probably heard you tell a handful of stories that you've done
that are worse than that.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
But you're still here.
I'm still here.
Yeah.
But that, you know, the movie's worth watching for sure. You're not going to get the full measure of Richard Kuklinski because you can't in an hour and a half. No. It's just not possible. But it was an entertaining movie. I liked it.
Yeah. I'll have to catch it out.
All right, Gibbs. So that was our Patreon episode on Richard Kuklinski. We hope everyone enjoyed it. You know, you can find a bunch of Patreon episodes like that.
Yeah.
At patreon.com/truecrimeallthetime.
Good stuff.
You know, we put one out every month. And in fact, we just dropped a new one yesterday on a love triangle between a millionaire, an ex-football player, and a blonde bombshell that ended in murder. It's a fascinating story.
Can't get any better than that. No. You know, that's some intriguing stuff.
It's Hollywood movie type stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Love triangle between those three types of people. So if you want, you can definitely go check that out. We hope that everyone is enjoying their holidays, and we want to wish everyone a happy new year.
Yes.
Gibbs, as we wrap up, we have some voicemails.
Okay.
So let's check those out.
Hey, Mike and Gibby. This is Brittany calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. I just finished listening to the most recent episode on Catherine Knight, and I have to say I'm glad that I was not eating my dinner while I listened to that episode. But I did want to give a quick reference to what Gibby was talking about. It was not actually called, or is not actually called, Dead Bodies on Tour, but it is called The Bodies Exhibit, and it's a traveling museum-like exhibition of human bodies that have been meticulously dissected, I guess is the right word, in a very scientific, anatomical way. Extremely fascinating, and I've seen it twice now. It's not macabre seeming, but disclaimer, I'm a PA student studying to be a physician assistant, so dissecting human bodies is kind of like a normal thing for me, so maybe to other people it is weird, but anyway, just wanted to give that information, that reference. Love the work that you guys do. Thanks so much. I've been a fan from the beginning, and I hope you guys have a fantastic holiday. Keep your own time ticking.
So definitely big thanks for that voicemail, Gibbs. Yeah. We got a bunch of them. Anytime you say something like that.
E.F. Hutton.
Everybody listens.
Yeah.
And then I get thousands of emails, hundreds of voicemails.
That's great, man. I love it.
No, it is great. So I played one voicemail.
Right.
I just picked one from what was probably 20 or 30, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Most of the emails I get say, Gibby was right. Well, yes. Was Gibby right? Was it really called Dead Bodies on Tour? I do not think so.
That'd be a cool t-shirt.
I did not think so from the beginning. I wasn't doubting the fact that there was some type of, you know, exhibition.
Right.
What I was doubting was the fact that you called it Dead Bodies on Tour. Like the Wiggles or something. You know, you're buying tickets to...
Maybe we can combine the Wiggles with the Dead Body Tour.
Is the Wiggles still a thing?
I don't know. Probably.
Oh, my gosh. I used to get so fed up with my kids. Is that even the name of it? The Wiggles?
I think it is.
I think it is.
Yeah.
It was one of those groups that you just couldn't get the songs out of your mind. Right. It would drive you nuts.
But how cool was it? I mean, I'm saying cool, but, you know, she enjoys dissecting.
Well, it's right up her alley.
Yeah.
She is studying to be a PA.
Yeah.
Hi, Mike and Gibby. This is Ivy Martinez. I'm from Orange County, California. LA born, San Ana Reef. We've had quite a bit of crimes out here. I actually have a cousin who's a guard at the prison where one of the Menendez brothers is at. And some people I grew up going to church with actually moved here from Texas, and they, their older brother actually grew up with Richard Ramirez. Anyway, 6 degrees of separation and all. Really, really enjoyed the podcast. And what else can I say? Thank you for the laugh. And yes, sometimes I want to scream at the crimes, especially the crimes against children. But I have to compose myself and remember that I'm at work. Anyway, love you guys. And keep your own time ticking.
But do you know Kevin Bacon?
The nexus for the 6 degrees of separation game?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, you and I have said it before. We're always fascinated by the stories of people that have these connections or some degree of separation from these really horrible killers.
Exactly.
Hey, TCAD, it's Brady from down in Alabama. Hey, I just wanted to say thank you for what you do. You guys are amazing. Mike and Gibby, love you guys. I actually work at UPS, and, you know, to get me through my day, I listen to you guys, and you guys are my by far my favorite. Love the podcast, like I said. I listen to you guys and True Crime Garage. I think that's stationed out of Ohio as well. But had a good recommendation. There's a guy from Alabama, Georgia. His name was Joseph Aiken, or Joseph Dewey Aiken, and he was a nurse that killed a bunch of patients, that kind of thing. Maybe you guys look more into it. I was doing some research on it. It looked pretty bizarre. It was like 19 patients he killed or something like that. But, you know, well, just wanted to say thank you guys. Y'all do an amazing job, and keep your own time ticking.
All right. Great voicemail. Yeah. True Crime Garage, Gibbs, those are kind of like our brothers. We know them very well.
Yeah.
They are literally about an hour to an hour and a half down the road from us.
Yeah. Pretty close.
Pretty close. But we appreciate that suggestion, and we'll definitely look into it.
Hello, my name is Suzanne Schmidt from Nuremberg, Germany. I love you guys, and I listen all the time because I deliver car parts, and I'm on the road a lot. And I just want to say I love you guys, and I think you're the best podcast I found. I always was interested in true crimes. And I have an interesting case for you, if you don't mind. It's the case of Fritz Haarmann. He was convicted and sentenced to death in the early 20s in Germany. And he killed about 24 young men and children. And I thought it might be an interesting case because you said you hardly have any cases outside of America. So I thought I'd give you a shout out and keep your own time ticking. Bye.
She says she delivers car parts?
She does. I was actually thinking I need a carburetor for a 68 Camaro. So Suzanne, if you're in the Ohio area delivering car parts, just drop that off.
But I'm thinking in Germany. Do they really need car parts? I thought German cars were just the best, man.
Are you putting down German cars?
No, I'm just saying. BMW.
Every car. Now, Mercedes. What I will say is those car parts are very expensive.
Yeah.
When you get into the BMWs, Mercedes, all those German automakers, man, from what I understand, because I've never had one of those cars,
right.
I don't make that kind of money. Those car parts are very expensive.
Maybe she delivers them in an armored vehicle.
Maybe. But we appreciate it, and we'll definitely look into that case. Have we done a TCAT in Germany? I know we've been there, I think.
We have.
At least once, maybe, I was thinking. But it's time to go back. Gibbs, we had mailbag. Our good friend Jamie McLaughlin Bearden sent us some Garrett's Chicago-style popcorn. It's by far my favorite. So, for one, if you've never tried Chicago-style popcorn with the caramel and the cheese together, try it. I know it sounds kind of funky, but it is awesome. And Garrett's is by far the best I've ever had. Our friend Lottie sent us some goodies from Denmark, probably getting us ready for our Scandinavian episode that we're rolling out in early 2020. She also sent us some very cool personalized coasters for the studio. And then someone sent us some TCAT magnets. But again, there was no name on it. I'm pretty sure it was the same person who sent us the mugs last week. All right, everyone, that is it for another episode of True Crime All the Time. It's the last episode, Gibby, of 2019.
Oh, yeah.
So
it is.
We appreciate everyone listening. We hope you had a good year. We hope you have a great new year.
Yeah, happy new year.
We'll be back with you in 2020 after the ball drops. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking. I want to tell everybody about a game that I've been playing recently called Two Dots. You know, primarily Two Dots is a puzzle-based game. You have to connect at least two dots of the same color to make a move. And then those connected dots are removed from the game area, and the dots above them drop down until they hit other dots or the floor beneath. But there's a variety of game modes. There's this really cool one called Scavenger Hunt, which is a really relaxing hidden object game. There's different levels to the game that are grouped into worlds, and it's very satisfying to move up. There's over 5,000 unique puzzles and fun levels, and with all the different gameplay modes, it really makes the gaming experience unique and exciting with every single puzzle. The visuals are amazing, and the in-game music I found to be very soothing. You can even challenge your friends on Facebook to make it competitive, link up, and see how your dot skills match up. And best of all, it's free to download, and you don't need Wi-Fi to play it. You can play it offline as well. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Download Two Dots now for free on Android or iOS.